Vision as art form, vision as spirit, both integral parts of our future. Part two today with futurist speaker and author Thomas Fry. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Thomas, thank you for joining us again here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
There are so many aspects to investigating / discovering / preparing for the future, and last week's interview barely tipped into the scale. Can we start today by discussing what a first step might be in investing in our future self? Is there a generic first step that you see? How can we create a good bet in investing in our own futures?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we all have this impression, or feel like our future self is going to be more valuable than our present self, so that we want to invest in education, we want to develop more relationships, more contacts. We want to somehow make ourselves more valuable for future opportunities. Now, sometimes we don't always get started in the right direction. So sometimes our education is a misfire. If we get an education, then all the jobs that we can find are like food service jobs or retail work. That's not exactly what we had planned when we got a college degree. So it's something that we have to carefully consider, and it's a very personal decision that people have to make. But if you ask yourself this question of, you know, if I could coach myself 5 years ago, what would I have told myself, or 10 years ago, and then somehow imagine what it would be like to have the person that you're going to become 10 years in the future come back and tell you, well, you should have made this decision, or you should have tried this, or gone through this type of training. It becomes a rather interesting scenario to start thinking through that.
As you were saying that, Thomas, I immediately went into this whole thing where it really brought the past and the future into the present. It was kind of interesting because it's a place, really, if you're speaking to your past self, and what would you say, then everything, I don't know, it was just, I don't even know what I'm trying to say, but it just all of a sudden took me into this place where I was dealing with a present moment, but incorporating
right.
Past and future. So the past, you see communicating with the past as important.
At least from an intellectual standpoint, I think that becomes real interesting. Somehow you need to become okay with yourself, who you are today, and make determinations as to what your next goal should be, what your next path should be. And I don't know, it's important to frame it around a lot of the future trends that are happening. I mean, what are the technology trends? What are the demographic trends? What are some of the big shifts that are happening? And to not get blindsided by the future. And so this whole thing about the future, you know, I spend a lot of time working on this concept of what's our relationship with the future. And, you know, then you start thinking about where does the future come from? How does it get staged, and how do we experience it, and where does it go after we've experienced the present? And there's lots of kind of bizarre things that I tend to play around a lot with these concepts, and that helps me as a futurist kind of gain a better grasp of where we're headed.
Well, I think it's easy to, for instance, if you look at job opportunities and you say, okay, well, I'm going to invest in this and get my master's in this, but a master's in sociology isn't really the highest paying job. And, oh, there are so many of those already. And it's easy to get lost without taking into consideration who you are and what you know you can do in this world.
Right. There's lots of people that are underemployed. They certainly don't need a college degree to become a bartender or a waitress or work in a retail store or a lot of manufacturing jobs. The hope, though, is that once you have a few years' experience, you can somehow leverage this training for things in the future. But that's a lot of the educational offerings today were developed 20, 30 years ago or 50 years ago, and they don't necessarily have. They're not totally applicable to today's environment. And so it's not easy to draw all the right conclusions that you want.
Yeah, I mean, how does a freshman in college have the right idea when in 4 years everything is going to be so different? It's almost impossible to know in some respects. And in your book, Communicating with the Future, you talk about re-engineering intentions to alter the master code of our future. And is that what you're talking about now? What is that master code of our future you speak
of? The scenario that I put together for that book is that we actually have the idea or the ability to create some visions of the future. And we put them together in a certain way, and then we label them with some keywords that we test out. So we can put together some vision of the future. We can do it through storyboards. We can do it through art and graphics and telling short stories and things like that. We can create a body of work around some aspect of the future. Now, this becomes very valuable for corporations that are looking for what direction should we head in the future, what product should we stake our future on. They can test these things out. So if you put all of these together, this body of work, and then you put some unique label on it, and then you publish it. You publish it online so that it starts getting sent out and through social media, through your other contacts, through emails, and then you start watching how many times this keyword phrase is getting used throughout the internet. So you're listening then. That's how the future then is communicating back with you. You're listening then to how many times this keyword phrase gets used, because that gives you some clues as to whether you're on track or whether you've misstepped or whether it needs to be reworked. And if you don't get the right response, if not many people pay attention to it, then you need to start over again. Then you need to go through another iteration or two of reconceiving what that future is going to look like. And then you republish it. And once it reaches a certain level of viralness, it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy then. So you've published this notion of what the future is going to look like, and you're paving the way than for whatever business or products that you want to introduce into that space.
Yes, and as you mentioned earlier, not all of us are going to be that inventor for the future, but we are going to have to take part in the future and be of service and use, just so we, be a part of what's going on. And I'm wondering, is there a psychology to being a futurist? Are futurists driven by fear sometimes, do you think? Or
a lot of people have kind of natural tendencies to think about the future. See, when people get up in the morning, they're thinking about how they're going to get to work today, and I'm thinking about how people are going to get to work 10 years from now.
Right.
Those same people are thinking about what I'm going to wear to work today, and I'm thinking about what people are going to wear to work 10 years from now. So I have a mind that tends to be time shifted into the future. But when I'm driving across town, I have to be in the here and now. So so I have these constant battles and conflicts in my head going on.
Yes, and so it's one thing to become aware of and just sort of set the scene to be more aware of what the future world will be so we can live in it more easily and play our part, whatever that's going to be. But in your book, you brought up the MIT student who developed Dropbox, for instance, for our computers. Yeah. And if I'm remembering correctly, he wasn't really setting out to make some amazing thing, Dropbox.
Right. It's virtually nobody sets out to create a billion-dollar business. If you try to create a billion-dollar business from scratch, you're most likely going to fail. If you want to create a $1 million business, you are much more focused and you're much more able to see that opportunity and to scale your effort appropriately. If you shoot for something, set your sights too high, then you're going to be, your focus will be way too diffused and things will start falling apart. So I'll give you an example of, you know, at the Da Vinci Institute, I've been looking at this whole idea of technological unemployment so much that, you know, we're freeing up lots of human capital. And this idea of having lots of available talent in the marketplace, you know, that's a good news and bad news thing. Because we can, on one hand, these people are unemployed. On the other hand, we have people that can do things. So what is it that we should be doing? I mean, if you ask this question, are we going to run out of work in the world? Well, that's a pretty preposterous question. There's no way in hell that we're going to run out of work in the world. But are we going to have jobs lined up for all the people that need jobs? That's a whole other question. And so, I mean, we've focused our efforts around this idea of we need to be able to train people for all these future jobs that are getting created. We need to have people, entrepreneurs that create new things, and then we need to create a very responsive education system that tackles the skills that are going to be needed in the future. And so that's where we got into this whole topic of micro colleges. We tested it out. It's working quite well. And rather than going to school for 4 years, 6 years to get a bachelor's, master's degree, you can go to school for 3 months and pick up enough skills to get an entry-level job into some new area.
Yes, and it's working out so well, and I'm excited for that to be happening. I just think that's a much better use of people's time.
Yeah,
for
I'll tell you a project that we're working on right now is we're trying to figure out how to start a micro college on the flying drone world. Flying drones they're absolutely fascinating, and there's so much pent up demand. People want to get into this space. But the FAA is responsible for controlling the airspace, and so they're really putting a damper on all this enthusiasm that's out there.
There's a lot to be figured out here.
Yeah, so we were thinking, well, if we train people for jobs in the flying drone space, well, it turns out there aren't really that many jobs yet. There's going to be a lot of jobs in the future, but we need the entrepreneurs to go first to actually create the companies that are going to employ all these people. And so we're actually thinking that we'll be creating kind of an entrepreneurial course that trains people both on the technology and also how to start a business and get it funded and all of those things. So that it's a kind of a different way of looking at things. But we're aiming at a moving target, and that's exciting and messy all at the same time.
Yes, understood. And Thomas, you are on such a cutting edge, not only with the way you're thinking, but your work and your talks and your Da Vinci Institute are having you walk this path, which is science fiction to most everyone, and yet you're steeped in it in your daily routine, so to speak. And I'm wondering if you would share some other things that are on our horizon. I know when we spoke last week, we were talking about the sensors, and you were saying how there could be and will be sensors in clothing, for instance, which can take information from the sweat that comes out of our skin, and it will be able to do all kinds of readouts as far as what our health is actually doing. And, you know, I thought about that in a few different ways. One is that, well, then there will be a sensor that can work in reverse to create balance. And then that made me wonder, well, then perhaps our health will be a worry of the past. I mean, how advanced will this go? Can this go?
Yeah, the other side might also be true, that we suddenly become aware of, you know, 10,000 more conditions that we can get. So we might be even further paranoid about our health, and because we can get one of any of 10,000 illnesses or diseases or something. And so we're checking all of these levels on a constant daily basis, worried about something else going to go just a little bit awry. All of these things, there's a good side and there's a bad side to them. So we have to figure out how to manage all this technology. Ideally, we can start improving our IQ about all of these diseases. Once we start understanding them a lot better, then we can start mitigating the problems. Just like it's you know, it's very easy to put out a forest fire when it's very tiny. When it first starts, it's very small. It's easy to put out that fire. It's also easy to put out diseases if you catch them right when they first start, before they turn into some cancerous thing that invades your entire body. So being right on the cutting edge of all these anomalies, I think this technology gives us the ability to do that. And so we can detect problems before they become serious, and stomp out these issues real early.
Yes. And I was also thinking about the virtual experience, how you can put on these glasses and it's like you are somewhere or experiencing something. And do you think that line of virtual versus personal true experience could ever get, you know, that little chasm between the two? Do you think that would ever disappear?
It's interesting you should bring that up, because I just finished my column this week, and it was on, I talked about a scenario in 2026, and I went to the library and went to, they just installed this new room called the Conversations Room, and how I ended up getting into a conversation with Adolf Hitler. And when I sat down, I was fully unprepared for what I was about to experience, because this interaction with Adolf Hitler, he came across as very much the imposing figure that he really was in real life. And he was the one that wanted to be in command, and I wanted to ask questions. And suddenly I found myself reeling from his presence in the room. And so that, I think, to become very real. And I think that's the intense type of learning experience that we're going to have in the future, that we could suddenly start understanding what the life is like for these different historical figures. And these things can be created based on enough information fragments out there, and they can be stitched together in a way that they can create a cohesive type of imagery, and then we can go through that type of experience, and it becomes thoroughly embedded in who we are. And so rather than just have this one-dimensional experience about reading the history of this person out of a book or through Wikipedia or something. You can actually experience a face-to-face confrontation with this individual.
So if we had that experience, and then we would have it more than once, we could do it with Hitler, we could do it with, I don't know, some other crazy leader.
Yeah, it could be Thomas Jefferson, Winston Churchill, we could do it with Mozart.
Right, those are more benign. And I wonder what that would do to our emotional makeup. I mean, if we got to a point where we could talk to a Hitler and not have it affect us.
Well, I think it needs to affect us.
I agree. But I just thought, well, if I could, you know, if you can just sort of emotionally carry yourself in a strong place when talking to someone like Hitler, it would, you know, it could bring out other parts of the personality. And anyway, it's just kind of interesting.
So in the column I wrote, I suggested that this this type of little studio, this conversations room, was put together by producers in Hollywood, some people that are developers, gamification people that know how to keep you engaged in a conversation, and historians, and a variety of other talents in the mix as well. And that could become, you know, quite the fascinating experience.
Absolutely.
And I don't think it's that far away, actually.
Yeah. And it was interesting for me, too, that you bring up the library, because that was something I wanted to talk to you about. You spoke last week about people making their own prosthetics because you can just get a printer. And I thought, oh, well, here's the re-envisioning of the library.
Yeah. Yeah. The libraries are not just a warehouse for books anymore. And so when you start imagining what a library could be, I mean, the idea of having a maker space in a library, having 3D printers, having laser cutters, and so it becomes not a place to consume things, it becomes a place where you go to produce things. Because when the tools of creation become available to everybody, everybody becomes a producer. That's a vastly different library than we went to as kids.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, I like it. What about agriculture? And don't go off into GMOs or I'll have to change the subject quicker.
agriculture is one of the most technologically advanced industries out there. They've had steering assist on tractors since 2009. So a farmer can go out and just make one round around the field, and then the tractor will take over, and it will very precisely continue to make rounds around the field till they have a screen like an iPad inside of the cab of the tractor, and they're essentially watching the tractor then paint the rest of the field. And so there's technology now where the farmers can actually track every individual seed in a field. And if for some reason the seeder missed a spot, then it gives a little red X that it puts on the field.
Wow, incredible.
Now, this technology is already available. Now, one of the downsides to modern farming is that they've focused on very few crops, wheat, corn, sunflowers, soybeans, and a few things like that. And so the trend, though, is that people want to expand biodiversity. So the consumer, on the consumer level, we're much more hyper-individualistic in the things that we want and feel that we need. So what we want to consume is vastly different than what farmers are producing right now. And so there's somewhat of a conflict there. So so we're going to see a lot of shift towards urban agriculture. We're going to see a lot more experimentation happening. And one of my favorite topics is this whole idea of underground farming, where you can drill a hole in the ground and you can plant seeds on the sides of this hole, and you have like a honeycomb casement up and down the entire outside. And then the whole thing is managed with a robotic arm that goes up and down through the center of this hole. Sunlight is channeled into this hole through fiber optics, and you can use atmospheric water harvesters to suck moisture out of the air to irrigate the crops, and so it becomes a self-contained growing ecosystem inside of this hole in the ground, if you will. And that's radically different than the way people traditionally think of farming.
Yes,
because this self-contained environment, you can grow crops 365 days of the year, and you're not worried about hail or winds, or and you can keep the bugs out and the diseases out. So you control that environment, and that gives you an opportunity to experiment with lots of different types of crops as well.
Yes, yes. Thomas, who has been your greatest mentor?
So some of the people that I really respect are people like Pete Diamandis, who started the XPRIZE Foundation and started Singularity University. I very much respect what Elon Musk is doing and the creative stuff that he's unleashing at SpaceX and Tesla. Dean Kamen is a great one. Dean is the guy that invented the Segway, but he's also working on water purification systems, and he's invented what they call the Luke hand, which is a prosthetic limb with all full degrees of movement. People like Muhammad Yunus, who is the Nobel Peace Prize winner, he's the guy that created the whole microloan industry. Started the Grameen Bank over in Bangladesh. Those are just a few off the top of my head.
Yes. And one more question. What advice are you giving your future self 15 years from now?
I'm giving myself the advice to never retire.
Okay. I was thinking retirement, and you're saying the opposite, so that sounds perfect.
retirement is a failed concept.
Oh, beautiful.
No, certainly you can slow down, you can do something different, but why not live up to your full potential?
Retired, a funny word and a funnier concept not to be bought into, by Thomas Fry, author of Communicating with the Future. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting on iTunes is at tributariesradio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.